disc jam, Fable, and a Parisian toilet. This is Staying In. Guys, I want before we like get into like big chat, I want you all to close your eyes, right? Close your eyes. And I want you to I'm gonna paint a word picture for you all, okay?
I think like this.
I wanna put you into a headspace. Into a land, mm-hmm. a faraway place, right? Got that? Where the caravan camels roam. Imagine that. It's flat and it's immense, and the heat is intense, everyone. It's barbaric, but for some it's home.
Yeah.
The winds comes from the east and the sun's from the west, and the sand in the glass is right.
Oh God.
You can hop on a carpet and fly to an Arabian night. Welcome to Arabia. Here is my Arabia that I've brought you to. And look at all the fancy stalls that are there. You can all open your eyes now because we're all here together.
Amazing.
I'm just bringing you in. And I want to take you to my favourite shop. And on this stall is a lamp, right? Okay. And imagine that you've all got this lamp. And it looks a bit shoddy. It's not really like a lamp that you'd find in...
I think we know this story.
But it's not like a lamp that you'd find on, for example, Deal or No Deal. Or what's the other one on ITV? The
Golden Balls.
Deal or No Deal?
What lamp is in Deal or No Deal?
Do you mean like Cash in the Attic?
What was the other one? What's the one? Bargain Hunt, that's what I mean.
Right.
Deal or No Deal's one of the boxes of Noel Edmonds.
Okay, well this
it's not okay. Like a lamp you'd find there.
Well, it's definitely not a lamp. It's a box that you find on Deal or No Deal.
Okay.
Bringing it back.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Right. And you open up this box, and inside is the world's most mundane genie, right? For whatever reason, he's only been given the powers to cast you each of you one wish, which I guess is collectively three. But okay. He can only cast the most mundane wishes imaginable. They can't make you any money. They can't bring you any sort of fame or notoriety. This one wish is just something that helps you with a mundane part of your life. For example, in this situation, my mundane wish is to always know the fastest way around a group of people.
Funnily enough, I think you've mentioned something similar to me in the past, Sam. And it's like a little worm that stayed in the back of my mind. And I was driving home the other day, and this exact idea came into my head of the mundane wish. And it's very similar to yours. And my mundane wish is to automatically know when you're driving, say on a motorway, which is the fastest lane to be in. So if you're stuck in traffic, you always know which way is going to get you home quickest.
Another good car related mundane wish is for when the fuel light comes on, for you to know exactly how far you've got, not to give you enough fuel to actually get to the next petrol station, but for you to know exactly how far you can push it, you've got left to travel.
To know in advance that you're going to have a problem.
Yeah.
I'm not going to be able to get off this motorway before my car breaks. Good to know
exactly.
This.
Exactly. Alex, what would be your mundane wish?
I seem to remember a similar question as well, and I think mine had something to do with socks, like no longer losing one sock or something.
That's good.
Like that, because you always do. Or there's always a hole in one of them, and you have to check the pair. So maybe that. Or not having to load the dishwasher. It just does it. Is that not mundane enough?
That's a bit too magical.
Yeah.
Could I make money out of that?
Can I just say, Pete looks like he's focusing on this more than most things I ever see him think about. He's really, really putting some deep thought into this.
I've only got one wish. This is the once in a lifetime mundane opportunity. I think I would choose that I would always, if I needed to be somewhere at 7 p.m., I would leave the house at just the right time to make sure I always ended up there at 7 p.m. Like, again, not being faster, not stopping time, just always knowing what time I needed to leave the house to make sure I turn up for that interview or like social function.
But surely that's just general life organization. Like, that's just like, just be on time for stuff.
I have that magical ability.
It's called a watch.
All right, well,
it's called looking at the train times.
Forward planning.
Bloody hell, like most people would pick always having the right change on them to a value of 5p.
That's a good one.
Like, no.
Always, no, they're I just always don't being a cold side of the pillow.
I just don't want to, like, I just don't want to have that embarrassment of turning up 3 minutes early or the slight shame of turning up two minutes late.
When is that ever embarrassing, coming up early for something?
Yeah.
Do you not feel embarrassed when you turn up early to something?
How many times have you showed up 3 minutes early and as you got there, you've noticed people kind of whispering to each other and kind of looking over at you? Have you seen?
So early.
3 minutes to, and he's already here.
You get in an hour early to your work.
It's all coming out now. But that, Alex, that's because he's so paranoid about not being there on time.
He just stands outside the building until bang on 7 o'clock.
Let me in!
No, Dan, what's even better? What he does, he gets there an hour early, but he stands at the corner, like poking his head around, waits for someone else to come, and then he arrives, like, oh, yeah, made it just in time.
Second one in all the time.
Slightly late as well.
To spin off that then, if you could have, and there is a right answer to this, if you could have one superpower, and I'm allowing kind of fully magical superpowers here, what's the superpower you go for? Mm. I'm allowing kind of superhero style.
Anything.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if you could have a superpower, what's your superpower?
Mine is to always know the correct thing to say.
Yeah, no, Sam's brilliant. Okay.
Whenever anyone asks you a question,
yes.
Whenever anyone says anything to you, you always know exactly the right answer.
No, you can't have that.
So Sam is eloquent, boy.
Yeah, but if you already say the right thing, then you don't get a true sense of someone. If you say the wrong thing, then you know who's worth being with.
Every superpower has to have a drawback. Cyclops can burn a hole through a wall with his eyes, but if he takes his shades off, he's just zapped somebody by mistake.
You can never kiss Jean Grey.
Exactly.
Oh no, that's Jean Grey's problem.
Not really. Yeah.
Well, Pete, what would be your superpower then?
Flight.
Just flying. The lazy option.
No, it's not. It's not lazy. Well, I guess
always
get
there on time.
But flight would be amazing. Flight would be not just because you could go and soar and do all that sort of stuff. It just makes life so much easier.
Things called aeroplanes. You know that, right?
Yeah.
But here's the thing, Alex. Right? Like you're just, like we go on holiday or something like that, and I'm like, cool. Right, I want to go to, I don't know, like, we went to Italy, right? You can be like, okay, well, let's book our flights and stuff. And I can go, actually, you book your tickets, so I'm flying there myself.
Oh, that's fine. You don't take Alex.
Yeah.
I've given some serious thought into this, which is pretty bad, but I've thought, flying, because that would have been my answer. But actually, I presume what you mean is, do you mean wings, or do you mean, like...
Superman.
That kind of rogue Superman, yeah, like that kind of...
Yeah, Superman.
Because if it was wings, that would be really tiring. I think that would actually turn into a ball ache. And you ran for like 5 minutes and you nearly threw up, so that probably wouldn't work.
And what Peter is also neglecting, that along with flying, most superheroes who can fly also have super strength, which I assume counteracts the fact that flying at such heights means that you'd probably contract hypothermia quite quickly. So I imagine like Peter in his like meaty body flying, lands down, it's just an ice cube, like, how was a flight, Pete? It's like,
He wouldn't be in like a hero garb, would he? He'd be in those thermals, like just in those little thermal pants, like, all right, everyone, in his little blue thermals.
I just wear my big coat.
You and your gangly legs flying off. Be great.
So Dan, apparently there's
the correct answer is obviously the ability to control time. That's obviously the correct answer. For one,
Bernard was a bastard.
Pardon?
Bernard's watch.
It never works out.
Well, that's
does it?
That's because they all do it wrong. Look, P Pete, your big thing is getting to work. Your big thing is getting to work on time. Okay, so all you could do is lie in bed until like 6:59, stop time, wander down the street, wander to work.
Yeah.
Then you arrive at work.
I disagree. I disagree. I actually think the best power. Have you seen Jessica Jones?
Yeah.
Have you seen that? I think actually the best power is David Tennant's role, which is being able to, you tell someone something and they do it or they believe it. You could be an hour late and say, I'm in on time, and they go,
but
yeah,
Sam already has that.
Yeah, but that's, Sam already that, has that. That. See, you can't have, I don't think you'd have that power and not be corrupted by it.
Well, is it, well, that's your
same
that's
with
your
controlling
thing.
Time.
No.
Just change the entire timeline.
Yes, you may just get extra lazy, and that's fine. That's not becoming corrupted. That's just getting lazy.
Yeah, but also using your ability to stop time to, I don't know, take a cheeky Greg's pasty before, you know, anyone can see it. Or,
do you stay like unchanged? Could you have 1,000 pasties and
I haven't worked out what happens to me during that.
Because if you stay in like a time bubble, that'd be great.
Yeah,
you could just keep
nothing that happens in there. It's not like
Dan freezes time on the couch, unfreezes it, and just suddenly gains 20 stone, and there's some like crisp crumbs on it.
It's like suddenly. And Holly looks at you like...
And then it's just like, shit. Freezes time again, works out for a week.
There's a little montage.
I will say, a lot of my desire for stopping time is based on me not wanting to have to get up to go to work in the morning. So right, I could, right, if I could right, stop right. time, I can lie in bed as long as I want and then just get to work and not have to worry about being late. I can get to work on time, not a problem, but
you wouldn't,
I've been up
you wouldn't
to
need work
bed.
if you could control time, you wouldn't need work. You just go back, find out who won, you know, whatever, or stocks or whatever.
So you've already become corrupted by my power.
Well, no, that's just making money
by your power.
I think you could easily get stuck in some terrible time loop. You wouldn't know what time was anymore, and if you jumped too far, you could, like, you know, witness your family's death and then be just crushed mentally.
It's not such about going backwards. I'm not like in a time machine. It's more about being able to stop time and being able to.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. Not, you said
yeah,
control
come on, I mean,
time.
Don't get ahead of yourself here.
So you could just stop it for a little. So you just want a lie-in. It's essentially what this is.
Well,
you stop the entire world to have a lie-in.
I'm not saying it's not been inspired by a lie-in. It's not the sole purpose for it. But it was the mere inspiration.
You know, the telling people and it's whatever you say goes would help your lion, wouldn't it? You could just go up to your boss and say, I want a lion. And they'd say,
yeah. I think I'd feel guilty.
And not stopping the entire course of time.
Yeah, because I'm the only one. No one is suffering. I'm not lying to anyone.
Not that they know of.
Well, they're not. No one's suffering. I'm not lying to anyone. With the saying whatever you want thing, I'm lying to people and I'm getting away with it. I'm manipulating people. I'm not manipulating people by stopping time. They're just staying still and I'm just wandering about.
If you've stopped time, how do you measure the time that you're sleeping extra by?
Again, I haven't worked all of these little little nuggets out.
You need one of those space watches, wouldn't you, that keeps going.
I'm not saying my superpower doesn't have kind of logistical issues.
Problems.
Can I just say this does remind me of a episode of Bernard's Watch that I saw that actually did begin to worry me about what the ability to stop in time was doing to Bernard, because his approach was he'd stop time and he'd like go to a shop, buy something and like leave little post-it notes around the place, like, I just bought a Twix, here's 30p or whatever. Actually, no, it was like the 90s. It would have been like 10p or whatever. And like it would have been massive, like a massive Twix for a 10p.
Bigger than your head.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he has all the time in the world to eat it. It's like, but then, like, when he stopped time, he'd do like little acts of vigilanteism. And once he saw that a guy was speeding, so he wrote a little post-it note on his dashboard saying, you're speeding, slow down. Start a time again. The car zooms off and all you hear in the background is this crash.
Ooh.
And just like, fucking hell, Bernard. And he just carries on walking, eating his Twix.
Does like, he? And does he slowly start to smile?
That's quite dark. I never saw any of that program. Sadly,
it's like Mr. Bean's Holiday when he hangs up on the guy who's going to commit suicide and he dies.
That's dark. See, there you go, playing with time, Dan. Not a good idea.
Yeah.
Well, I've not been corrupted. All I'm doing is having a lion.
Not now.
You don't have the power. You don't have the power.
I've not been corrupted.
We
could be using it now. We don't know, do we? We just stop and everyone's like, why is this really long pause in the recording? It's just of nothing.
Listen, we have obviously talked about literal time machines and metaphorically... both Alex and I have been doing time travelling in terms of the games what we have been playing. Alex, you've been playing Fable 2?
Fable 1 again, revisited. Yes, I bought the Lost Chapters because I've never played it before in the hopes that I'd see new content as well as reliving old. And I guess my kind of was a little experiment to see if it was a rose-tinted view I had of the game. And if it's like not holding up well anymore, or if it was actually everything, you know, I hold it up. It's one of my favourite games, if that's still the case. I'm pleased to say it is still. It holds up very well.
So,
yeah.
So if people haven't played the original Fable...
To be fair, I'm pretty much one of those.
Have you never played it?
No, not really, because Fable kind of passed me by. I think I played... because I knew Fable was kind of really popular, and I think I may have bought Fable 2 or Fable 3 and tried that, but I didn't get very far in it. It just didn't seem to agree with me. But I didn't get really... I wouldn't say I played it enough to get into kind of the core game, really. I just... I think I got it like for like pre-owned, like £2 or something like that, so... there wasn't an impetus, really, for me to put a lot of time into it if it didn't grab me immediately. So...
yeah.
I always kind of thought of it as like a... bit more childish, child-friendly RPG type thing. Am I in any way right? I generally don't know. Can't really remember what it was.
I guess it's got a lot of British humour that makes it quite, you know, humorous, and it's fairly light-hearted. But there's, you know, there's lots of sex in it and STIs and that sort of thing. So it's not childish, but it's child-friendly, I guess, in the way that. It's all fairly harmless, really. And there's the odd swear word, but it's not Grand Theft Auto level. it's a fantasy role-playing game. It's not particularly long. I think the whole thing is probably about 15 to 20 hours, although I've seen speed runs of it in, you know, an hour, so you can...
Well, yeah, when you compare it to kind of like similar games now, that's very short.
Yeah, but it was groundbreaking. Even the problem that Fable had was that it needed to be sold because nobody had heard of it, and it did sell very well, but it was sort of upsold so much that when it didn't deliver on certain things, that's where it got the flack. So it didn't quite
What do you mean?
Peter Molyneux was the person who pushed it forward and got it recognised, but he kind of promised things like trees growing in real time and real, like, you know, big things.
So what happened with No Man's Sky now, basically?
Yeah, essentially. And unfortunately, it simply couldn't deliver on that because there wasn't enough time or that simply the technology to do it. But it did create a fantastic game that was completely different from anything else at the time. It's got a very unique style, which I think is why I like it. It's very British humour.
So do you like it for the same... reasons that you liked it before or for different reasons? Because I'm sure now we've made certain leaps in game design and games development, there are things that certain holes that you might be able to see in it now that you forgave, you know, however many years ago. So do you like it for the same reasons or of those?
I think I'm actually more forgiving now, having come out the other end as a games developer. I see why they made that jump or where they cut that corner or that sort of thing. But actually the Lost Chapters is quite good because they filled in quite a lot of those gaps, so it's got extra content. However, there is the odd glitch that Lost Chapters seem to have, so that, you know, there's the occasional bump that I still go, oh, when it catches me and I think, oh, that could have been ironed out. But mostly it's still handling very well. And they upped all the textures and everything as well. It still looks great. I'm not sat there going, this looks awful. I still think it looks good. 2 is obviously much bigger. I think 2 is probably the best game, really. But I remember I got it on, I was playing it for about an hour, and I thought, I was trying to decide, was 1 or 2 my favourite? And I was like, I think it's probably 2 by a long shot. And now actually I'm nearly towards the end, and I'm like, no, it's not quite as a long shot as I thought. They're still fairly even.
So what are you playing it on?
I'm playing it on PC.
Okay.
I originally played it on the first Xbox. And it's very good for that controller. For PC, it's a bit more, feels a little mangled. the UI,
you need
is
that big massive
terrible.
Brick of a controller from the original.
Yeah. Oh, they were
that joyful controller. I had an Xbox as well. That was I love that controller.
One. Oh man.
You could kill a man with it.
If you so wished,
I'm just saying.
Yeah, if you wanted
it
to.
Was a very, very large, bulky controller.
There's 2 types. There was the normal type, and there was that big, bulky one. I had both.
Yeah, the so big, bulky one was the original. Small. And then, I think very quickly after it came out, they kind of went, yeah, what were we
this
thinking?
Why
did we dedicate half of the controller to a big X side that did nothing?
It was so bad. Yeah, no, they improved it pretty damn quick, though. And actually, it's kind of stayed the same since, hasn't it? Because it's such a good design. But yeah, I had both, and I did not use that one for very long because it was awful. My hands were too small to grab this giant behemoth. And with, you know, certain games, you have to press quite a lot of the... There was a little white and black button, wasn't there, that you had to press as well.
I completely forgot about the white and black
they did
button.
Yeah, there were six buttons, plus the D-pad...
What?
That was so plus bad. So
2 joystick or 1
there was
joystick?
So there's 2 sticks. Just at the top right. Yeah. And then just above that, they had like white and black. And in the original Halo, white and black were grenades, I want to say. Or attack. Certainly one of them was grenades. And it was so bad. Like they were so close. They were so small and so close together that you just hit both of them at the same time. It was just my fat hands that would do it. But they did that. But they also, as somebody who played a lot of fighting games around that period of time, those were also the buttons that they pressed, that they put the heavy attacks onto. So white and black had like heavy punch and heavy kick in the 6 button Capcom fighting games, and they were so fiddly. And so easy to miss an input that it just made fighting games using that controller so bad.
Well, I think when they just redid the controller very early on, because the original controller only had triggers on the back, that's when they put in kind of the L1, what we know from the PlayStation controller, the L1, the R1 buttons, and they turned the white and black ones into those like shoulder buttons.
Yeah.
Much better.
Very, very
much
quickly. It was an odd design. Sorry, I've taken your conversation away from Fable now.
No, it's quite funny seeing the how they've transposed that to PC, you know, with all the various things that would be at the press of, you know, your fingertips, and now it's all in front of you, and it's really overly complicated, and I had to remap all of the buttons just to make sense.
So you're not playing with a controller, are you? Playing with mouse?
No, it won't actually support controller, I don't think. The lost chapters. The UI is just... Actually, Sam, that's what I can't forgive is the UI, because I know too much about it now, and it's just... They've done what they could with it, which is essentially like a Windows file, you know, boxes come up. They're not particularly designed or anything. They're just your classic thing. Whereas in Fable Anniversary, which was 10 years on, it's the same game, just souped up with modern graphics and all that. That's an example of where a UI artist has gone mad and has been allowed to do far too much, and it detracts completely from the entire game. So yeah. I like that. I didn't go with that for that specific reason. I went with the old one. So it's not flashy, but it does the job. I mean, but yeah, no, it's been interesting. I've been trying to do something that I didn't do before, which is be evil. I can't be evil in games. Turns out I suck at being bad. I try. And then it never works out.
I always get drawn to being good. I always kind of think, yeah, I'm going to be bad. And then I'm like, well, I quite like being good.
I tried so hard. Mm. I called myself...
Damn my moral compass.
I called myself arseface. I was, you know, I massacred an entire village in the hopes to become evil. And then I did something else.
Yeah, and then I just feel bad.
Yeah, I did. I felt really crap. And then, anyway, the main quest gives you good points anyway. So I was sort of stuck in neutral for ages.
So do you think it would have been better if it facilitated your evil a bit better, like noticed that you were going down this evil train and gone, well, here's a lot of evil things you can do.
I'll admit.
Isn't this fun?
I'll admit it's partly my fault, because it does give you a few chances right at the beginning to do very evil things.
Yeah.
But I decided not to, as in I just thought there's a character that you can kill, and I thought, well, I might just keep her. So, because I know she's going to be there later, so I'll see what happens. I've not seen that content yet. I'll keep her alive. Turns out, obviously, that is the good way to go. So there's like checkpoints that would get you really evil up until a certain point. Yeah. I did manage to get incredibly evil, and then I found that nobody would sell to me, because traders would run screaming into town, and I would chase them going, please, can I buy your stuff, please?
Infamous was good at that as well. Like, if you went down the evil way of giving you extra power and giving you... You know, that almost that sense that you were succumbing to some sort of external pressure.
Mm.
Infamous was really good, because they did that thing where there were like different levels of evil you could that you could be. So if you were like, you know, lightning dickhead, then you could you'd be walking along and people would throw a stone at you and be like, yeah, get out of here, we don't like you, lightning dickhead. Whereas if you were like full on, I am, you know, stormy asshole, then people just run away.
What's the difference between lightning dickhead and stormy asshole?
So many things are different.
so much, come on. Like, lightning dickhead is like, I'm going to set your car on fire for no particular reason, ha 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 ha. Whereas like stormy asshole is like, I'm going to murder these people. And like, because why not?
It was basically what BioShock didn't pull off, like in terms of.
Yeah. Can you have grey? Basically, you can have. It's not entirely black and white. There is a kind of grey area. That makes those things really interesting. I think that's what I was trying to do with this. I was trying to be a character that, if it suited me, I'd save people. If it suited me, I'd kill people. And actually, you end up just doing this on the spectrum, you know, back and forth, rather than hanging neutral. But it's a very interesting system, and I did like the morphing system, which is also very fun, because you physically change in the game depending on what you do. Because the idea is, it's a kind of, Albion is old, it means old England, it is the old, ye olde times with magic and that sort of thing. So you are from a lineage of gods, and that's why you change. Like, you're different to everyone else, you do change because of that. And in 2, I think your bloodline from that, so you change as well. And then in 3, it's so diluted by that point that it doesn't really make any difference. And you need special gauntlets to help you make magic, because it's there, but it's so tiny, it doesn't make much of a difference. But it has been very fun going back and actually not being disappointed with it, because that's the risk. You can go back and it ruins your perception, because you're, oh crap, this didn't look as good as I thought it did, or that's just my little child's mind remembering it. But actually, it's been great, and it's been making me laugh a lot. There's demon doors, for whoever doesn't know, and they each have a little thing behind them. Usually the sort of gift isn't too amazing, but it's a little chest behind, so they're quite fun to figure out how you're supposed to get behind them. Some of them are riddles, some of them you have to be powerful, or, you know, hit them really hard. And one of them is, he says, if you can spell out my name, I'll open for you. And there's 4 stones that you can hit. And his name is Hits, and I couldn't remember what it was. And I whacked one, and it said S, whacked another H, whacked another I, whacked another T, and he went, shit. And 2 Balvery, you know, these horrible werewolves came out of nowhere. And it just made me laugh, because the guy was like, oh, shit. And it's because, you know, I'd pressed the wrong, you know, I'd hit the wrong thing. And then I spelt it completely different another time, it does nothing. But I'd never done that before in the game. I either got it right the first time by accident, or so it's nice finding things as well that I'd never seen.
That's good, because it almost shows that, like, obviously it was a game that was built with a mature sense in mind, so maybe when you're a bit younger you just didn't put those two bits together to actually appreciate some of the maturity in it. Like, the only game that I've ever really gone back to play has been Metal Gear Solid and Resident Evil 4. But both of those times that I've gone to play them, it's always been on a sort of like a version that has been regenerated and improved in some way. So there's never been that aspect of being unhappy with how it operates, in a way, because the Metal Gear Solid game that I replayed was the one for the GameCube, and the same for Resident Evil 4, from the GameCube to the Wii. So both of them were superior versions of the games that had gone previously. So for me, it was very much actually being able to appreciate what was happening in the story of Metal Gear Solid, and rather than just like having an experience that just went over my head, it was just kind of like Action Man saves the world. Actually had a bit more of a so that's interesting that, like, you've almost discovered this maturity behind it. It's a bit like when you watch a film that you probably weren't supposed to watch when you were a kid, and you watch it when you're an adult, and you're just like, how did my parents let me watch this stuff? Like,
you're like, oh. Yeah, it's kind of like a Pixar movie where it's kind of bright and colourful. But as a kid, you see the colours, and as an adult, you see all the kind of in-jokes. And it's a bit like that, yeah. I'm seeing beyond what I saw however many years ago it was now, quite a few years ago. So that is a layer I didn't expect.
Pete, you said you'd gone back in time. where have you gone back in time?
I'm playing a completely modern game at the moment, called.
Of course you are.
Of course, sir. Completely modern.
Of course, that's how you go back in time.
Of course, it's called Disc Jam, and it is the reason that it's thematically going back in time is it's very much based, and I think the developers probably are quite happy to think this about their own game. It's very much based on a very old game called Wind Jammers, was released on the SNK set of hardware for home and for arcades. So they're basically comparable, very comparable. But this has been a sort of modern version of a nostalgia trip, i.e. it feels like Wind Jammers used to play. And however, I'm playing it on my PS4. It's built in Unreal Engine. It's got amazing online play, and it's got modern trappings. It's got the Rocket League. It's got a bunch of like Rocket League layout, which is like really nice.
Peter. What the fuck is Windjammers? Like, explain the game.
It's got wonderful multiplayer.
I'll explain to you.
And lights.
It's got all of those things.
It's about wind and jam.
It's
raspberry blow.
The point I'm trying to make is that it's very modern, but it's based on an old game. And that old game, and this new game. So the idea is that there is a disc. It's like a frisbee, basically. And when it's
like
thrown,
Tron.
It stays on the. Yeah, absolutely. It stays on a horizontal plane all of the time. So it doesn't have a sense of gravity on it. It's always on one level. And then the main game is that you have two players face off against one another. And the disc goes to one player. That player then throws that disc back into the opposing player's side. The opposing player has a goal, which is the entire width of the court. And they must stop the disc from going into their goal.
So it's kind of like pong. Yeah, I've played a little bit of this. I saw it as basically an arcadey game of tennis.
Yeah, well, okay, yeah. I mean, so it's actually a bit closer to stuff. It's kind of like a mash of tennis and volleyball, because it is possible to It is possible to score technically by making the ball by making the disc drop, but that's a special move in and of itself.
But that's just like tennis.
Yeah.
So it's a lob shot. I've played some of it because I've downloaded the beta as well, they do have the lob shots, and that's just like tennis, the lob shots. And so I didn't think it did enough. You compare it to Rocket League, and I understand the comparison with Rocket League, but I think what Rocket League did with football or soccer for those not English, or kind of from the UK, it did a lot more with that, the idea of playing football, changing it up, than this does with the idea of tennis. It feels like tennis.
I think it's a mash of I think it's actually its own thing. It's not trying to be tennis, and it's not trying to be volleyball. It's trying to be Windjammers, which is itself a take on a couple of different things. And as a take on Windjammers, I think it's really, really good. I've been putting a whole bunch of hours into it recently, into this beta, and come back to some of these mechanics and stuff. So that description that I gave sounds quite simple, but what they layer on top of that is if you time the button press right of returning the frisbee, essentially. So you receive the frisbee, and as soon as you receive it, you press return again. The game then starts to speed up, kind of like you might see in like an Arkanoid, I guess. Or something similar to that.
Seriously, you need to make references that we actually
Jesus
understand.
Christ. You can't throw away a phrase like, oh, just like, you know, with an Arkanoid. And like, not okay, expect. So
me and Sam
are going
to start doing
call.
That with football references.
I guess so.
You know how I feel with the flanger ban. And it's very much like a distant cousin to the Widgie Kando.
Did you play the Windjam thingy?
Windjammers?
Yeah.
So yeah, I played Windjammers.
How does it compare to that one?
No, what's an Arkanoid?
Oh, sorry.
Okay, so Arkanoid is like Breakout.
Oh, God.
Jesus Christ. Yeah, okay.
You'll never get to the end of it.
You know Breakout,
I feel we're
surely
falling down a spiral rabbit hole.
Okay.
It's like tennis.
It's like tennis, that's what it is.
Okay.
It is tennis.
Okay.
It's not like Arkanoid. It's not like Flamin' Out of Fizzbatch.
So the disc comes through to you, and as you catch it, if you press the button in time, you throw the disc back at a speed that you normally would not be able to throw it at, i.e. it gets faster if you get the rhythm right.
Yeah.
Right? And
like tennis.
If you get... I suppose so, like tennis, but really... No, I suppose you're right, actually. And so it definitely has those mechanics in there. There's that kind of speeding up process to it, which is really, really cool. You can get some really good, as you're saying, like the tennis metaphor, you can get some really good rallies going. And then there's also the ability to hold up a shield that you have. And when you... If you hold the shield up and fully charge it, and the disc hits the shield when it's fully charged, the disc spins into the air, and then you charge essentially the disc up. And when you then return it, you do a special move. And these special moves can include they're all very, very fast, but they are things like you throw the disc and it does a sort of loop-the-loop kind of maneuver, which is just something that you would never normally see when you're normally returning, because you're usually either doing a shallow curve or you're a straight line that then pings off of the side, like Pong. But this curving motion, for example, is very, very different. It really puts players... It really can make players panic and then have to try and figure out how they return that. But, and again, here's an additional layer, and this is where we're getting into where these, like, where esports starts to come in. You've then got specific counters to that. So if you can dive across the actual play space very, very quickly, you can move very fast, but you can only dash a certain distance. So you can move at a normal speed, or you can dash quickly, but only a certain distance. But if you can get there and then return that special move, you essentially throw another special move back. So it's like amping up the tension and the action and the speed all of the time until something like a, you know, something like a volleyball, for example, where you want to slow everything back down again. And you go, you know what, actually, what I'm going to do is I want to drop the ball on their side. It doesn't bounce or anything like that. I want to drop this frisbee on their side. So I'm now going to do this lob shot, which goes over their head, and it just simply one bounce, bam, it's down. It's just one hit on the floor, and it's a scored point. So you're going from this very horizontal, very fast play to something that then goes up into the air and is very, very slow, but you then have to change your sort of thinking around that stuff. As I say, been playing the beta. They're doing a PS4 and Steam beta sign up at the moment, which is I've gone to both, and it's just. It's ridiculously fast and ridiculously fun, and the fact that it's kind of it's a beta at the moment, and it just feels like a full game already.
So how long is a match then? You know, do you play to a certain number of points, or do you? Yeah.
So you play to a certain number of points, but the number of points you get is not fixed. So the number of points, if you do a really long match,
rally.
So a really long. You're right. Really long rally.
Like tennis.
You build up the number of points that you get. The number of points that you get actually increases. So unlike a tennis, unlike a volleyball, unlike all of these sorts of things, it's not like a 15 love and a 30. It's not set score. It's if you are having a really long game, what this one really long rally, then you can end an entire match within a couple of actual rounds. So the actual games themselves, they maybe last like 4 or 5 minutes. So it has that Rocket League-esque get in, play it for 5 minutes, play, you know, you play it
play
for an hour,
5 minutes. You just said a match lasts for 45 minutes.
No. Each
4-2-5.
Each match is 3 sets, so best of 3. Basically, so could end 2-0, could have been 2-1.
Thanks, Dan. Can I move this conversation on to the person who actually knows about sport? Right, okay, Dan. Right, can you explain how this game works?
Okay, so each match is made up. It's a best of 3 sets. To win a set, it's the first person to get to 50 points, and then the number of points you get is determined by the length of the rally that you do.
Yeah, I've said all of these things.
No, but you didn't.
You didn't really.
But you've not used any words that actually make sense.
I was listening to you like,
that's
I'll get
I
this
don't know
at
what
some
sports
point.
Are. This is, but you're all like, oh, it's like, this is the fucking Arkanoid reference and stuff like that. I'm like, you're like, oh, it's like tennis. I'm like, I don't fucking care or no. Like, oh, it's like what Peter Henman or whatever the fuck his name is does. Oh, it's all like you're constantly doing rallies and lubily blots and all that sort of shit. Fuck me.
A rally is a rally.
It's video games.
Yeah. So what I'm interested to know is how does this link to, you know, nostalgia and...
Yeah. Because it is very much, it is, for as much as we're talking about this stuff, like it is a 3D version of Windjammers. And Windjammers is now like 20-25 years old.
Is it like, better? Like, what? do you get the same feeling from it? Are you surprised by it?
I get the same. I have not been back to Windjammers, and I get the same feeling I remember having playing Windjammers. I don't know if Windjammers is still great. Yeah, absolutely. But the actual core mechanics, like absolutely, like they're identical, like. There's neat little twists and that sort of and slight diversions here and there, but it really is very, very similar. And it absolutely holds up because it is really like a very arcadey game.
I would say that the comparison I would make, and I'm not saying that this is a good comparison, bad comparison, however you feel about the aims, I would say that Disc Jam to tennis is what Mario Strikers Charged was to football.
Oh, okay, that's good.
So that kind of thing where it's very arcadey, there's no kind of the regular rules of football don't come into play because in the same way with Disc Jam, you can't go out of play, where in tennis you would go out of play because the walls are there, the disc bounces off the walls, all the general rules of tennis are there. Getting it past your opponent, not letting it bounce, all those things are part of the game. In the same way with Mario Strikers Charged, the fundamentals of football was there, but you had all the extras of building up a charge so you could have a super shot and all these different elements that you could factor in. And I'd say that's where I'd make the comparison in order to kind of explain what this game is trying to do. I think it's trying to be Rocket League for tennis, but I think in actuality that's the comparison I would make in terms of comparing it to football.
It definitely takes from what I understand now of tennis, it definitely seems to take a lot of the strategies of tennis.
Okay, which are?
Which are changing the speed of the ball / frisbee to your to your advantage.
Yeah, kind of. Tennis is more about
changing the pace and flow of the thing. So, for example, in tennis, if you get very very close to the get very very close to the net in tennis,
yes,
and you hold your racket quite limply,
yes,
you can get the ball to hit the racket,
yes,
and it will drop on the other side,
yes,
very very lightly.
Yeah,
and then it will bounce twice, and then you get a goal.
Yes, but you can do that in tennis. But it's more tennis is more about the manipulation of your opponent. So controlling,
yes,
controlling the speed and the pace of the ball is one thing. But you do that to move your opponent out of position to open up a chance,
yes,
to score.
And that's exactly what Disc Jam
and it has
well.
That.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's these. They're definitely those strategies and stuff.
But Dan,
here's the thing. Here's the thing, though, Dan. Like, you keep saying, like, it's like tennis, but like it doesn't have like Virtua Tennis is like tennis, but it's a very arcadey take on tennis. Whereas Disc Jam is not following the same thing of, you have to bounce the ball on the other side. You know, there is the option to do, like, very, very acute angle cuts so that it, you know, flies off to one side. Like, it isn't tennis. It is very much its own.
It's taken all bits that it wants to take, frisbee, tennis.
Yes.
It did look very. It reminded me of Space Jam, the film. I don't know why. It gave me that feel. Maybe it's because it had Jam in title. I don't know. But
yeah, definitely. Does it. Is there a team mode? Because for me, that's like Rocket League's great, but I never play it on my own because for me, well, let me rephrase that. Rocket League's great, and the reason that I enjoy playing it when I'm on my own or with friends is the fact that I'm forming part of a team, and even if it's, and Rocket League does a great job of you being able to easily communicate what your roles in the team are without any conversation happening. Within the first few minutes, it becomes quite evident people who like to play up front, people who like to sit back in goal and do all that kind of stuff. And Rocket League's gameplay mechanics are great and, you know, that kind of thing. But I enjoy it because it is a sport that's also a team game. And that's what I like most about it. But so for me, I think I'd enjoy, from what you said, I think I'd enjoy playing Disc Jam for 4 or 5 hours, maybe a week, maybe longer. But as soon as I think that I would lose interest in it because there's not that team element to it that comes along after playing Rocket League for a while.
So there is the option to play 2v2.
Okay.
So the
like tennis
roles that you play like tennis, I guess.
Just accept it. That's all it is.
Because I've been inspired by Chris, I just thought I'd say, have I ever told you guys the time I was caught with my pants down in Paris?
Go on.
Metaphorical or literal?
Literal.
Oh my god!
It's like having Chris right here.
It was so bad. So
what I like about already this story is Pete's face.
Is Pete's face and the fact that when Pete recounted his trip to Paris, this story featured in none of that.
It wasn't my story to tell.
I'm ready to tell the world.
You're in a safe space. Go ahead.
So I think my bladder is probably about the size of an acorn. So I tend to, whenever I go anywhere, instead of, you know how Jason Bourne sort of looks at the security cameras, I'm always, where's the toilet? There's the toilet. Okay, I can make it 5 minutes. That's my power, Sam, is I know wherever a toilet is. So as it happened in Paris, I'm walking along thinking, oh, Christ, there's no loos anywhere. And then actually, they've got these...
That's because I called something different in French.
Yeah. Toilette.
Toilette.
Or something like that. Yeah. With a fancy pants.
Where's the loos? I just can't...
where are there so many toilets?
For no toilets.
You French riddlers.
And they've got these, like, pod things. And I thought, brilliant, pod thing. So I'll go in. So firstly, it's in French, so I don't understand a thing. But the door opens. I go in.
That's all I look for is an opening door.
An open door.
It shuts behind me without me pressing anything. Okay. And immediately I notice that the stuff that's in the sink and the toilet is really not where I want to be. I really don't. I've changed my mind. I don't. I can hold it. Whatever it is. I turn round. There's now 5 buttons blinking at me, all with different things. I don't know. No symbols, no nothing. I press one, it locks the door. Okay, press another, it doesn't open. I'm like, well, okay, I'll try. So I'm working on kind of hovering over this disgusting seat. And for, you know, for a bloke, you can sort of, you're turning, you're facing towards the...
You can angle.
If there was an instant, you're probably going to be right. For a lady, everything is facing the door. And I'm...
That's a good colloquialism.
Pete is outside. And I'm about, well, you know. And the door opens. And I didn't press anything. Door just opens. And I'm there. In Paris, and there's Pete's face, who's just on his phone, and then goes, oh! And it was the most irritating. Thankfully, I wasn't too far, and there weren't too many people around, and I get out with my dignity intact. However, the door shuts behind me, and they do a flipping like shower blast, so I could have been stuck in there and drenched. I'm never going. It's a death trap.
There's a shower in it.
The way that toilets clean themselves in Paris is after a certain number of uses, i.e., after a certain number of times the door closes and then opens again. When it closes again, the whole thing goes cool, flood the entire room with water.
I was nearly in a kind of Quake style room. It was horrible.
I just got this vision of the door then opening and this kind of cascade of water like throwing you out along with it.
It's like, ah! That nearly happened. That was terrifying.
Anyway, well, I'm glad you were able to make it out of there. And by the sounds of it, Pete was really helpful. He just kind of looked at you with his wide-eyed wonderment.
He laughed so hard. I was so angry. I was angry for a long time, and he was just laughing.
Guys, there's some great videos on YouTube of people like standing on toilets and sinks in Paris toilets.
I'm so glad I'm not the only one.
Cleans itself. Just like Brits abroad, like fucking hell, what's it doing?
I told you, it's like a death trap. Oh, I'm so glad I'm not the only one.
For a while, I did actually get really invested in playing, what was it called, Grand Slam Tennis on the PlayStation 3. I had Move controllers and everything. It was great. It's the only way to play a tennis game is to have like full one-to-one virtual like movement of the racket. The only two sore points of it is that like I play a Grand Slam. And like the next day, my right arm would just like be limply hanging from from my shoulder, and I have to like kind of move my whole body just like to get my arm onto a desk to do work or whatever. And Pat Cash, you know Pat Cash is, don't you, Peter?
Yeah, didn't he present Finders Keepers?
Moving on. Okay, firstly, that was Neil Buchanan. You're thinking of Pat Sharp, who hosted Funhouse. And Pat Cash is the Australian tennis player.
And why, in a game called Grand Slam Tennis, would they get in Pat Sharp, who was only famous for trapping kids in a playable house and having sex with twins?
Oh, God.
So Pat, the tennis player, he would, like, they'd obviously either underestimated how long people would play the game, or they were just low on time. But he had like basically four phrases that he would say that just repeated over and over again. And the most egregious of them all was, "Oh, it's just like he's playing a video game." He'd just be like, "Oh, you fucking
stop it! Stop breaking the fourth wall!" Yes.
Oh, he's making it so easy. He looks like he's just playing a video game. I am, you know.
What a hilarious joke. You're Psycho Mantis.
Yeah. like it was funny the first time, and then you thought, oh, that's interesting, isn't it? And then I did really well in that game. It was the only it was the only useful thing that the Move controllers ever did. I think.
They disappeared, didn't they?
Well, you can use them in the brand new amazing piece of PlayStation hardware, the PSVR, that everyone's raving about.
Yeah, it's brilliant, isn't it? It's like 2017 technology mixed with technology that's like 6 years old, however old it was. Bloody hell. Only Sony. Remember those things you all threw away? Well, bring them back.
Dig them back out, guys. Because we're going to make them awkwardly not work with our PlayStation VR.
The other thing I found the other day, as well as my Move controllers at my dad's house, going off on a tangent, was the crossbow holder for Wii for Link's crossbow training for the Wii. Do you remember that?
Brilliant.
No.
It was like a gun thing. Like, it was basically like a safe way for kids to say that they're playing with guns, but not really, for the Wii remote. So like, you put your thing in, you put your Wii remote in, it's like a gun, but it wasn't, because it was a crossbow. And it was actually a clever move from Nintendo to get all these stuff into people's houses, so then they could go on and sell like House of the Dead, and I think they had like an on rails Resident Evil. But yeah, Link's crossbow training, that was a good fun.
I stay up at night sometimes thinking about the landfills humanity have created just on those shitty peripherals for the Wii that would turn your, you know, controllers into a bazooka.
Did everyone get a 5-in-1 for Christmas? A golf club?
Yeah.
Tennis racket. How many of them were there in the end? There were loads, weren't there?
So many. So many.
I at least got a little golf club, which didn't actually make it a full-size golf club. It was just like a little golf club head that you put it on. A tennis racket.
I had the steering wheel that came with Mario Kart.
Yeah. I also got a hat.
A hat?
I got a... For my birthday, which was very, very recently, I got a little USB pen tablet.
Oh, let's talk about that. Because you sent me a little picture on WhatsApp of that. And I was like,
that was me showing off.
I know, it was you showing off. You're very much like that. But what? I was like, huh.
I like to kind of mess around kind of with visual stuff, using Photoshop, creating different things. And I've done lots of stuff in the past, of bits and pieces. And I've always kind of just thought, I've always had to work with other people's stuff and then try and adapt it and stuff like that to kind of create something. Whereas what I'd like to do is try and put an image that I have in my mind directly on the screen, kind of to work with. I'm not an artist, I'm not a drawer, and I say this fully in the knowledge that, Alex, you are an artist and an extremely good one at that. I'm hoping that kind of over time I can kind of teach myself to put what I see in my head on paper, because that's basically the part. I think I can, I know what I want to create, I just don't have the ability. So yeah, I've got this kind of small graphics tablet now, which is kind of just like a toe in the water to try and see how I get on with it and how it can work, and am I capable of doing bits and pieces. So with that in mind, Alex, as someone who for a living works in this kind of this area, you have done kind of, I've seen the work that you've done in a multitude of different areas, whether it's 3D sculpting and painting or 2D drawing on a bit of paper, and everything in between. Where would you suggest someone like me who doesn't have any experience, I'm not interested in becoming an artist or anything like that, but if I wanted to take a step in that direction of just learning how these kind of things work, where would you suggest I start?
So you have Photoshop.
I do. Yeah.
Do you, when you say you've got things in your head that you want to pop the paper, are they characters, are they designs, are they logos? Like, what is it that you've got in your head?
Kind of those kind of things. So logos or kind of artwork, or I mean, because I do for
by artwork.
Artwork's the wrong word in my mind. I know what I mean. I like working on computers. I'm not much of a doodler. I will draw stuff like that, but I will work on computers a lot more than I would on kind of pen and paper. So that element I've always enjoyed. So if I can do that more often, as a hobby, I would like to be able to just, when I have an idea, rather than saying, okay, can I do something with this? Can I make money from this or anything like that? It's more of a case of challenging myself. Can I create what I have in my mind?
Can you make it reality? It's quite interesting that you say you don't really like doing the paper side of it, because I would probably say start with that, because you're making quite a leap by doing the tablet. Some people find it quite disjointed. You've got that kind of disconnect between the tablet and the screen. But if you can get used to it, then that's fine. It's just another way of working. It is essentially a pen. It's just, you know, on a different screen. It takes a little bit of time to get used to. I think it depends what you really want to get down. If it's just kind of, it sounds like you kind of like graphic, there's a graphical things in your head that you
yeah like. I think it's more driven towards graphic design than kind of the work that, and I will at least know some of the work that you've done in terms of your artistic work, in terms of creating characters and that type of art. It is more in graphic design.
I think you probably need to, I think, you know, in school classically you get given assignments, don't you? So like, make a leaflet for this, make a movie poster for this. It's maybe setting yourself some fake things to make. There's the new Blade Runner movie coming out, do Blade Runner 2, something like that, and get source images from Google. I mean, you're not going to sell it anywhere, redistribute, so nab stuff, reference material, and have a go at composition, but also learning the pen tool would probably be incredibly useful for you. And probably off the
when you say pen tool, what do you mean?
There's a tool.
Do you mean literally the physical pen?
I should be more specific. In Photoshop, there is something called a pen tool, which looks a bit like a little the icon is like a little fountain pen.
Yeah.
And it basically is a way of cutting out things incredibly cleanly in a vector as well. So a vector slices through pixels. So it means no matter how much you blow it up, how small you make it, it will stay crystal clear, which is what you want, Dan, especially if you're, say, printing something off, or this is really good for print. And it's what professionals use. It's it is the difference between professional and amateur, if you can use pen tool. And off the podcast, if you would like, I can teach you how to use it. But it is a very good, it's the difference between when you see a piece of artwork on, I see it sometimes even on iTunes, or and you see like a little like a sharp edge, or the they haven't got the hair, or they've kind of done spiky hair. You think, what?
I always see those. I think that it's that kind of thing that I look and think, I think I could have done that better.
Yes.
When I see those kind of things, or if I see kind of like a fuzzy, I can see where it's, as you say, it's not kind of vector graphics. If it's a bit fuzzy or a bit soft, I think that needs to be crisper, that needs to be cleaner.
Yeah, a little extra pixels. That's usually when they've used like a big selection tool, something called the One tool, which just tries to select as much of the same colour as it can.
Yeah.
And that's people who haven't gone in, maybe they've not had the time simply, but the pen tool is the difference between that. And having a tablet as well with pressure sensitivity means you'll be able to sort of redraw hair back in that you've cut out, for instance. So with the Staying In podcast, I took your guys' headshots. I actually chopped most of your hair off, and most of you had a completely round head, and I redrew your hair back so that it would look perfect. You know, you could see behind every strand, you could see the background, things like that. So practice cutting out, practice your composition and fonts as well. Look into fonts. Font Squirrels is a great place to go. It's usually royalty free. Don't get used to, if you're ever doing it professionally, don't get used to just finding fonts off the net. It's nice to use DaFont once in a while to kind of find what kind of thing you might want. If and this is to the listeners as well, if you're ever going professionally, don't get too used to using big font sites like that, because quite often you do need to pay someone. So try and use good royalty-free sites or ones that are already on your machine, and having a look at what actually works. Usually there'll be about two or three, you don't want to do too many, but actually having to think about what works with each other, you know, is a secondary thing. Should I have it with, you know, sans with no little bits coming off of it, or you know, that sort of thing, or have it serif? Or people kind of forget about that a little bit, and it is very important. It can be quite boring. And, you know, colour schemes as well, the colour wheel and complementary colours, especially with nowadays the fashion is quite the plainer the better. So things like, this is evident in games like Firewatch, is actually very plain, blank colours, but the way they're layered and the way they're put together can have some of the most startling, you know, something like No Man's Sky, say what you want about the game, but it's a fantastic colour composition. Just the colours are spot on. Mm-hmm. You know, even when it's random, they've always got complementary colours from ground to sky. Things like that. So it's like taking what you've got in your head and splitting it up into all those different factors. You know, what's the title, what colour, what font, what's the subject, person, creature, you know, whatever, how well are they cut out, how big are they, how small are they, how many subjects on the page, what's the background, is it interfering with your main image? I find sometimes the background is the most difficult thing to start with sometimes. You don't want it to be boring, but it does need to be interesting enough that it doesn't, that it pulls you in, because it is kind of what your mind will wander to without even realizing. And then later on you start thinking about composition and pulling your eye back into the centre and getting things to keep pulling back into the centre. So yeah, I'd give yourself projects, like a movie poster or something. It sounds kind of silly, but it's kind of like the first art class where you're supposed to draw a fruit in front of you. And I wouldn't worry about, don't worry about mistakes or getting things wrong, you know. And also don't spend hours and hours on the poster, and you've put 10 hours into it and it's still not looking right. Like, just move on. Do the next one. Do like five in a couple of hours.
Yeah.
With concept art, if I'm doing characters, you start off with just silhouettes. Just, you know, 10, 20 silhouettes. And you might make one character out of that if one's looking quite good, like you can work with it. But the silhouettes will look rubbish. You know, they'll be awful blobs, but the point is you've churned it out. So yeah, not getting too perfectionist about it as well is always a good thing. You can always revisit it, or you might find a bit later you've gotten your skills up and you look back and you're like, actually I'll tweak my old work, and it's like when you've written something a long time ago and you edit it again
because
you know more. Things like that I would probably say to start off with.
Cool. That's really helpful. I will try. Fingers crossed. I'll be an artist one day.
If you cross your fingers, Dan, you won't be able to do the art.
So step one should have been uncross your fingers.
That's my top tip. Don't cross your fingers, Dan.
That was Staying In with Daniel Frost, Peter Willington, Alex Briscombe and Sam Turner. If you enjoyed the episode, then please leave us a review on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Also, you can help us spread the word about the show by following us at Staying In Pod. Also, if you want any more information about any of the topics covered on this episode, then visit stayingin.podbean.com. But for now, thanks for listening.